Welcome back to Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. Meditation is an ancient practice dating back thousands of years, and some suggest even longer. In its original form, it requires nothing more than a place to sit. But meditation and mindfulness have gained newfound popularity in recent years. And as with everything else in our lives, technology seems to be creeping in. From meditation apps to sensors that can detect and maybe even enhance the brain changes associated with meditation. Experts gathered in Boston recently to discuss the possibilities and ramifications of technology-assisted meditation. Zev Schumann-Olivier is the director of the Center for Mindfulness and Compassion at the Cambridge Health Alliance, and he moderated that symposium. Zev, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Give us a sense of what it was like at that symposium. What was the overall mood? Are people in the field really excited about this, maybe a little concerned about where things are headed? What are they thinking at this point?
There was definitely a lot of excitement among the participants. Multiple people came up to me and saying, I'm so glad that you held this symposium. It's so important. We need to have one next year and the year after.
Is that because they're so concerned about where this could go or so excited about where it is headed?
Well, I think that there's some of both that was there. There definitely was a lot of excitement about the different areas, the potential for increasing access to meditation and mindfulness for certain populations who couldn't normally access it. There was excitement about some of the ways that technology might make meditation easier for people who might feel like there's a barrier to it, either due to psychiatric symptoms or pain or other difficulties with attention. But there were also a lot of people that brought up certain types of concerns, worries about whether or not it would impact the way meditation is taught, the way that people might try to seek out certain types of positive experiences instead of the actual goal of mindfulness meditation, which is be able to accept whatever the nature of your experience, however it is. And so there's some concern that perhaps these kinds of technologies could lead people to crave a certain type of experience.
When we talk about some of these apps, clearly developers see a market and an interest on the part of consumers. As a psychiatrist who has treated addiction and mental illness and uses mindfulness and meditation kind of in a clinical setting, what kind of opportunities do you see for perhaps spreading access to the tools of mindfulness and meditation?
We've been doing various different research within mental health as well as primary care settings. And one of the findings that got me interested in this was that we had, as our control group in one case, people that all we did was give them instructions on how to download the four most common mindfulness-related smartphone apps at the time. And the other group, we gave the more intensive 8-week mindfulness program. And what was interesting was that the 8-week mindfulness program clearly was transformational and caused reductions in, you know, anxiety, depression, stress, increased capacity to make behavior change, and was, you know, well received and resulted in a lot of mindfulness practice. But we were surprised to see actually just how many people had some practice in the control group with these smartphone apps and the recordings that were available on the Center for Mindfulness and Compassion website. And in many cases, the people that ended up using those devices the most were the ones that wanted to be in the next round of groups after they completed the study. That being said, there's also the reverse, that some people will start to get exposed to mindfulness in a way like this without having a teacher or group leader to be able to support them. And when they find it hard or they get stuck, in one of the ways that people always get or very commonly get stuck when they start practicing, that they could get stuck and then feel like this doesn't work for them. And I think that's actually one of the worst outcomes that mm-hmm. can happen. We did have one of the founders of the Koru Mindfulness Program come, and she was talking about the way that they developed their app so that they could see daily practice from emerging adults who were practicing mindfulness, and a teacher could actually give feedback on a daily basis if someone was having difficulty practicing or had a question. Within the app, they could respond back within a day and say, well, that's normal, that's how the brain works, and that's what happens to everyone, why don't you try this? and people could actually potentially learn more quickly because the feedback and support's there more quickly.
Are these kinds of meditation apps the main technology that we're talking about right now when we talk about technology-assisted meditation? Or what are some of the other options or ways that technology is now being merged with meditation?
There are four or five main technology-assisted meditation domains that we saw at the symposium. Probably the most common is the smartphone app, and there are numerous different types of apps that have been developed. There is something called neuromodulation or neurostimulation, which is generally involved in either using some kind of electrical current, magnetic pulse, or vagal nerve stimulation, or even some folks were talking about ultrasound-based stimulation to be able to create currents in the brain or in the cranial nerves that could lead to changing the experience.
I mean, we already know that meditation changes the way the brain works. Is the goal there to try to imitate or replace meditation with some sort of more direct physiological treatment, actually, you know, as you said, stimulating the brain?
Right.
Or is there some other goal with that?
Right. One of the goals might be a synergy between what we might call top-down being the mindfulness approach and a bottom-up, which might be the stimulation. That might be synergizing together to be able to lead to a deepening of the calming experience with mindfulness meditation. In one case with transcutaneous vagal nerve stimulation by engaging the vagal nerve and the parasympathetic autonomic nervous system, we actually may be able to deepen that kind of relaxation response that might happen while somebody is meditating. There are other neurostimulation interventions such as direct current stimulation, which suggests that if you give low ampage currents to the frontal lobes, that there might be some kind of inhibition of those areas and allowing a greater sense of calmness. Those are some of the stimulating products, the neurostimulation and neuromodulation projects. We also heard about the neurofeedback systems, such as the Muse system, and some of the questions about that system and the design process for designing a technology-assisted meditation product that could be widely available. There's some concern that came up there about the potential for over-marketing or marketing for people to be able to get some kind of experience out of their meditation to make it easier, when in fact, in some ways, what mindfulness meditation is about learning how to be with things even when they're hard.
Obviously, the people developing these technologies have these really creative and well-meaning ideas for how to increase access to meditation and mindfulness and also perhaps make it an even more effective experience. But when you first mentioned virtual reality, I actually laughed because it seems so counter to the very idea of meditation and mindfulness, to be in the present moment, whatever that present moment is, not creating a virtual reality, but accepting this reality. Do we know enough, do you think, about how the brain works to really be tinkering with, you know, how the brain reacts, trying to enhance or modulate or stimulate the brain during the process of meditation?
Well, I think we do know a fair amount about the way the brain is being impacted by meditation and mindfulness meditation in particular. Over the last decade, we've learned a lot about the processes that are involved, the impact on attention, the impact on emotion regulation areas in the brain, as well as aspects of the brain related to the way that self-related processing and the way self and other interact. That being said, I think that the concerns that you have were ones that I had going into the symposium, wondering about whether or not virtual reality was actually bringing people out of their body, as opposed to bringing greater awareness into their present moment experience and into their body. I think there could be uses for it, like I talked about, as far as developing compassion for others and having that kind of meditation practice. And it does seem that for certain people who have a lot of difficulty with meditation initially, that virtual reality may be a way for them to be able to calm themselves and settle the mind so that maybe they then can go forward with the practice in a more traditional way. There are many doors into starting to develop a mindfulness practice if the practice only stays with the technology and there isn't a way for people to transfer what they're learning with the technology into their daily life, into the time when they're sitting quietly by themselves or when they're stuck in traffic driving and need to be able to calm themselves to avoid road rage, then I think that we're not helping people.
I'm talking with Zev Schumann-Olivier of the Center for Mindfulness and Compassion about the changing role of technology in meditation practices. And Zev, you started to get at this. We haven't fully differentiated between meditation as kind of a separate practice and mindfulness, which you can practice throughout, you know, your day, whatever's going on in your life. Do you think that there's a role for technology in that more integrated mindfulness practice as well as the more discrete practice of meditation?
It probably depends on the technology. Some technologies seem to maybe induce or deepen relaxation and provide an environment for focus, which may help with meditation, which really is the returning attention again and again to some object of awareness, whatever that object could be. Mindfulness, as you said, is really present moment awareness without judgment, with acceptance, curiosity, and openness to experience. And mindfulness meditation is when you're returning your awareness again and again to the present moment with that orientation of non-judgment, acceptance, openness, curiosity. So I think that these smartphone applications, some of them might have certain types of reminders, systems built in that could help people to be able to bring their awareness back to the moment when they need it. There are some HRV biofeedback tools. I think they're actually becoming quite common now that will kind of have the capacity to let you know when you're stressed and then be able to just remind you that this is a moment of stress and that you could bring awareness back to this moment. And sometimes that could be enough to be able to help someone to reconnect with the mindfulness practice they had at that moment or become a little more aware.
Zev Schumann-Olivier is the director of the Center for Mindfulness and Compassion at the Cambridge Health Alliance, and he led a recent symposium about digital technology and meditation. Zev, thanks for talking with us.
You're welcome.
And that's our show. You can always connect with Living Lab Radio on Facebook and Twitter. I'm Heather Goldstone. Thanks for listening.